5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tom Ianelli here with you for another Croc podcast. I hope that will change your life, change your survivorship, change your entire attitude and state of mind. With me, as always, the loyal to the point of working to the point of death, Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin. God bless you, my friend. Thanks for being here, even though you are COVID positive.
You know what's funny? I think that's a great t-shirt. I'm going to have to think about that. I'm good. How are you doing, buddy?
Thank God. Hey, listen, before we started the podcast, everybody, just to let you know how devoted this young man is. This guy, I swear to God, even though he's my brother and my friend and my dear brother in Christ, I still feel such an admiration for him. Picked himself out of his bed to be here for us and to record for us. So we have a fresh podcast for you, watching two little kids doing everything. God bless you, Angel. I'm going to make this real simple for you. You know, I like to talk, so I'm just going to take it from here.
Rock and roll. Let's do it.
So, Angel, I had a very interesting thing that happened to me 2 weeks ago, and it was very unusual. So today's podcast is a very introspective podcast. It's really a call to arms. A challenge to the doctors and nurses out there that listen to this podcast. And although it's indirectly not related, it's not directly related to our survivors. Mm. It is indirectly related, because I feel the more that we can inspire the cancer team, the better care our cancer survivors / thrivers will get. So okay. I'm sitting in the office 2 weeks ago, and Monday comes by and it's a quiet day, and Tuesday comes by and it's a quiet day, and Wednesday comes by and it's a quiet day. Thursday comes by, it's a super quiet day. Friday comes by, it's a quiet day. And I said to myself, this is the weirdest week I ever had, because usually, we're so busy, double, triple booked and nonstop between all of the double bookings and putting out the fires and all the different issues that happen during the day. I have to tell you, when I come home, it's a lucky if my eyes see 8 p.m. That's how tired I am, just mentally exhausted from work. And this particular week, it was just happened to be a slow week. And I'm not sure whether it was vacations from the patients, vacations by the doctors, whether the new treatment paradigms with more targeted therapy and less radiation or whatever. And I didn't really know the answer, but I got to thinking, and I was in the room with patients, and I noticed that even though I didn't have the double book or the triple book, and I didn't have everybody banging my door down, who wanted something, I still noticed that I was very fidgety. Like my whole core was fidgeting, and it was like, I still had one foot out the door even before I got out of the room. And it really made me think. And what I thought we would do on today's podcast is kind of talk to our practitioners, talk to our nurses and doctors, and really challenge them to look back at what their core values are. What was it that brought you into medicine? And I thought about that. And I said to myself, if it's going to be slow, let me figure out where I am, where I was, where I'm going. And sort of it was one of those come to Jesus, come to Moses, come to Muhammad moments where I really felt compelled to start asking some tough questions. And I will tell you another thing that is very strange about me. I have two superpowers, one of which we'll talk about in another podcast. But one of the superpowers I have that really goes back to however God wired me, I have this weird gift to be able to do the work of three or four people, no problem. And I'm not sure whether it's my OCD, I'm able to line everything up and do a lot of things and multitask or whatever. I remember as an intern, me and another intern by the name of Billy. And I know that like when you're an intern, one of the greatest challenges you have is to try to keep your service pared down as thin as possible. You know, so your workload isn't too crazy. And if the people who are efficient getting patients on and off their service tended to have at least a tiny bit of a life during their internship. And me and Billy used to battle back and forth and have these contests to see, you know, whose service was the thinnest and the most efficient. And, you know, I must admit, Billy won, but not by much. And we were about 700, you know, fathoms, you know, ahead of everybody else. I mean, we were just two freaking, you know, power monsters, you know, going through internship. And that has kind of served me through my career and has helped me be able to handle a large workload. But even though I have that gift, when I didn't need it, I didn't know what to do. And so what I did was I tried to explain to myself, why am I feeling this way? Why am I so like positioned to be efficient and get so much work done when really, you know, I have an opportunity this. I had such an opportunity that week to spend an hour or two with a patient, to be able to do that little extra, some of the home visits that I've been putting off, some of the hospital rounds that I've been putting off, some of the teaching for some of the residents, some of the mentoring that, you know, I never get done. And I said, why don't we take an opportunity and do a podcast? Because I was so inspired by that momentary thought, and go back to the beginning. And I'll ask myself, but I also am asking this of our listeners, of our healthcare providers. I want to know, what were the events that motivated us to become doctors and nurses? And what are the core values that we built our careers upon? So that's what today's podcast is going to be about. So question number one, why did we become doctors and nurses? Hopefully we became doctors and nurses, especially for our survivors / thrivers, because we believe what we do is a sacred duty, a sacred task, not just a job. And we've been saying, you know, on this podcast, Angel, you and I, we've been saying this forever. And I broke it down into 10 sort of little sort of bullet points on the subject as it relates to me. And again, I'm going to challenge those out there. Sadly, we don't have an interactive program where you guys can chime in, but I'm hoping you're chiming in, you know, to the screen. The first bullet point is, what was your perception of a doctor from your family? So many of us, Angel included, come from immigrant families. And a lot of times, you know, this is America, it's a melting pot. And I'm pleased to say that we still have immigrant families. It hasn't died. So the types of immigrants or the countries that the immigrants are coming from are different. But back in 1900, you know, when all the Irish and Italians and everybody were coming in, and influxing into the States, I came from an immigrant Italian family, very hard workers, bakers, you guys know. And we all thought doctors were like holy shaman, like they were absolutely to be respected, and they were pillars of the society. And, you know, you showed respect to doctors. And I have a funny story about my pediatrician. I remember having the flu and being so sick, I couldn't even lift my head off the pillow as a young kid. And my mother threw me in the bathtub, dressed me in my Sunday's best to go sit in the doctor's office to diarrhea all over myself and throw up to see Dr. Peter Pascarelli, you know, in Paterson, New Jersey in 1964 or whatever year it was. And, but I mean, just the thought, we're going to see the doctor. I don't care how sick you are. You're going in the bathtub, you're putting on clean clothes, and you are going to go see the doctor, and you're going to be happy about it, whether he gives you a shot or not. You know, what's a kid's famous line? I'm not going to get a shot, am I, Ma? Well, you know what? I would get one on the backside if I made any comments, you know, or embarrassed them in any way. So I'm hoping you guys kind of had a similar sort of feel, and that might have been one of the motivations. Also, maybe a family member. My Uncle John was the guy. A family of blue-collar workers, except for one who went to college and graduate school, and he became a doctor, and he was revered by the family. Like, there was nothing, you know, when this guy came to town, like, you dropped everything. You know, Uncle John's here. It's like, it meant, you know, was like almost like the second coming, you know, and that was such an inspiration. And I wonder if you all had that as an inspiration, having a neighbor, a family member, a grandfather, a father, an uncle, an aunt, a cousin, you know, who really inspired you. Also, the medical school application process. Angel, I went back to my Dropbox because I kind of try to scan all my documents for a future review. And this was the opening line of my medical school application. I said, and Matt, this gives you kind of a little bit of a glimpse on what I was thinking or what my thought process was even back in 1981. Medicine has been my goal, my dream, and my desire for as long as I can remember. That was the opening line to my medical school application. I mean, imagine a kid, and again, I hope my colleagues out there kind of felt the same way, that really felt a connection and was really desirous of getting into to have the opportunity, the great privilege of becoming a doctor or a nurse. And then the getting in process, there was so much competition. You know, I went to state school. I didn't go to an Ivy League school or whatever. And, you know, it was so hard to get into an American medical school. And by the grace of God, I did get in. And my life was made on that decision, you know, to accept me into that program at Rutgers. And then just the process of getting through. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but it was not an easy process. I worked my tail off. I was really so fortunate and unfortunate to be elbow to elbow with some of the smartest people I ever met, all Ivy Leaguers, very bright, smart people, caring people. And I'll tell you, I say this to everybody, there was not one day during medical school, at least during the first 3 years, less so in the fourth year, but I think every day for 3 years, I was terrified that I was not going to make it. And it was just, you know, it was the best of times and the worst of times, to sound like Charles Dickens. But boy, I'll tell you, you know, and having that investment into something so deep and caring so much about it, again, tells a lot about us, Angel, about the your doctors and nurses, you know, because people that didn't feel that way, that were just there because their parents want them to be there, or they were just there because they wanted to make money, or they were just there because what else did they have to do? You know, I'm hoping that the people that are in oncology felt the same way that I felt. And I hope that. Then there's divine inspiration. We have many podcasts, both on this Croc podcast, as well as on the Have Faith, Let It Begin podcast with Angel, where we talk about divine inspiration, and we feel that there are no coincidences, that we feel that God really has a plan for us. And I went back to my Dropbox and I looked at what my medical school graduation page, you get a page in the yearbook. And the first thing that I wrote on that page was, commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And I really felt, oh my gosh, I must have really had some kind of feeling that there was something more powerful than me that was helping me get me into the school to succeed and get through the school. And I want to just ask all of you out there, all of our beautiful doctors and nurses who take care of our survivors and thrivers, if they felt the same way, if they felt that they were being helped, you know, by some kind of a divine inspiration or a divinity or a higher power. Because again, I think to be able to get through that process intact and still caring and empathetic, you know, I think you have to have some, you don't have to have my connection. You don't have to have a Christian belief or a Jewish belief or, you know, a Muslim belief or whatever. Just you have to have a connection to a higher power, because I've said this before and I'll say it again. You know, when you go into medicine or nursing and you're learning about the human body and you're learning about what I would say the miracle of our species, of being a human, you know, being a Homo sapien, I mean, just the way the body works is just unbelievably complex and miraculous. And, you know, there have been many before me and there'll be many after me who feel that there is some kind of a divine connection, you know, to what we do. Then we all go through a career crisis. Mine happened to be in my internship, where the first time I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I did feel very secure and very compelled, knowing that I was doing the right thing. I was in the right career. I just didn't know exactly which way I was going. And again, back to that divine inspiration, I took the road less traveled to oncology. I wasn't one of some of the students I mentor. They've known they wanted to be an oncologist from when they were five. My best friend in residency, Charlie Cathcart, he knew he was going to be a radiation oncologist like from when he started medical school. And it was just so weird for me to come in through the back door, you know, but I still felt that I was on the right path. And again, going back to how we became, did you have was your road rocky getting to where you are in oncology, whether you're a pediatric oncology nurse or PA or NP, or whether you're a thoracic surgeon who takes out lung cancers all day? Did you always know that that's what you wanted to do? Or did you think you were going to do something else? Did you just end up doing that? Or did you always know you wanted to do that? And then there's the patient as a resident that really, inhabits you, really inspires you, really you remember forever and ever and ever. And my patient, I can say her name because sadly she passed away. She was 20 something years old, probably about the same age I was. Her name was Linda, and she had a terrible, terrible cervical cancer. And me and Charlie, I told you, Charlie Cathcart, my other resident, we would go and bring her McDonald's in the hospital and sit and visit with her and her husband. And we all knew she was going to die, but, you know, she really touched us. And then when my kids were young, being on a beach, you know, watching them build their imperfect sandcastles, you know, there's that moment of inspiration, that moment of epiphany where you say to yourself, well, I'm going to be an oncologist and I'm going to take care of cancer survivors. You know, just being great at what we do, is that going to be enough for them? Is just being a good doctor or a good nurse going to be enough? Are there anybody out there who feels the same way, that just going to work and doing a great job is enough? Don't you feel that, you know, sometimes you have to go above and beyond for our cancer survivors and thrivers, and forget about even oncology, you know, medicine or nursing, just in general? Don't you feel the need to do more for our patients because there's just not enough that we could do for them? And then my first Relay for Life, watching the survivors do their victory lap and the beautiful music, the wind, what is it, the wind beneath your wings or whatever. Geez, it was just so inspiring, and the tears, and it was just so amazing. And then the Croc organization started in 1999, and all we've done over the last 25 years or so is do nothing but do stuff for our survivors and thrivers, like this podcast. Do you guys do extra stuff? Do you guys make your house calls? Do you guys, you know, help out your patients with grants or support? Or do you guys make calls? Do you guys give your cell phone numbers out? Are you guys really in it? Are you guys 100% committed to the field? Is this what you got in there for? And then I remember my early years at what was called Horton Hospital, in the basement, in this horrible basement department, you know, which was always dirty and filthy and just awful and dark and dank. And I opened my office door to go outside to the garbage dump. And oh my God, it was just horrible. But it was also amazing at the same time. As horrible as it was exciting. Do you guys remember your first job? Do you remember the first time you got, you know, you became a director? Do you remember the years when you were in your 30s, when you were just learning and figuring it out, yet still having all that responsibility of taking care of these amazing people? And all of that was on your shoulders, but it was a different time and you were a different person. And do you remember that person? Do you remember all the love that person had in their heart for your patients? And these were all the things that I was thinking about, you know, during this week when I wasn't busy. And then I went back to the second question, which was, what are my core values? What were the values that I brought into the field? And I want to ask you all, what are your core values? Does medicine, you know, haunt you? Does it haunt your reverie? Or is it just a job to you? Would you recommend medicine as a career for your child? It's too many of my colleagues, especially during the years of, you know, the insurance becoming powerful and us not being able to make the decisions the way we used to, or not getting paid the way we used to, or, you know, not getting the reimbursement, or having to fight, or, you know, just complete. And the perception of doctors in the community, instead of us being revered and respected, sometimes even I feel that we're targeted. Does that bother you? Or are you still in the game? Do you still feel like you felt? And do you excessively fantasize or can't wait until you retire? Or are you going to be like my hero, Dr. Dinsmore and Dr. Kazem, two of my mentors? Dr. Kazem worked 65 years, still working in radiation oncology in Florida. I don't know how many days a week he goes in, but he's still working 65 years in the business. Dr. Dinsmore, a local oncologist in, you know, the Hudson Valley, just turned 75. And he seems to be, he's getting a little tired. It's the first time I've ever even heard him talk about retirement. But, you know, there have been days where he would say, I would never want to retire. And I kind of feel the same way. I feel I don't view my work as a job. I view it as a privilege. It's not a burden. Do you feel the same way? Do you feel that you're burdened by your job? And what are your pillars? You need to have four pillars to support the roof of your career, of your work, of your life's work. What are your four pillars? Mine are to engender informality. You guys know the way I practice. I practice with a baseball jersey and a pair of sneakers and a wrinkled pair of khakis. And I also am so devoted to being a teacher, not just a doctor, but a teacher, to make sure that all of our patients know what they're getting into and know everything they can know about their disease, and encourage them to approach me or approach their doctors and have them demand accessibility to be able to reach their medical teams and to be involved in their care. What are your four pillars? I want to know what they are. And then I want to know, have you ever gone out and have you gone through the process and the trouble of actually trying to verbalize, to write down what your vision statement is? What's your mission statement? What's your value statement? What are your goals? What is your culture of your practice? And I'll tell you mine. My mantra is to replace that metaphorical stiff white coat of the medical system with a warm, soft blanket of love for our survivors and our thrivers. My vision is to make cancer preventable when able, supportable when necessary, and curable always. My mission statement is to ensure and have a sole purpose to support survivors and their families who strive to turn tragedy into triumph with love, compassion, empathy, warmth, and patience in a non-judgmental, safe, and non-discriminatory environment. My value statement is never ask anything from a survivor and never refuse anything for a survivor. My goal, same as Angel, is to help each survivor one at a time, not have to cure the world, but just one person, one survivor, one thriver at a time, and create a friendship, not just a doctor and a patient, but two human beings who are joined in a life's journey at the same point in time in this vast universe with a history that goes back billions of years and hopefully will continue for billions of years. You know, we happen to share that small, tiny grain of sand in that space-time continuum. And we hope to create through these friendships a community, to create a nation of survivors who are empowered. with information and wisdom to win their battles. And lastly, Angel, my culture is a universally loving, supportful platform with no discrimination on the basis of gender, race, creed, sexual orientation, or any other way. Without any support, specific social, political, national, or global agendas that would potentially marginalize any of our survivors. And again, what is it that you are trying to do out there? You've been in practice for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, 35 years, or more. Have you lost sight of what it was that you were? Have you lost sight of what you wanted before you got into medical school? Are you still in touch with these core values that you had when you started your practice? And Angel, it was the slowest week of my career, but maybe the most demanding philosophically and probably the most purging spiritually. Your thoughts?
Well, first and foremost, I think it was amazing. That was just an amazing testimony. I'm going to call it a testimony because it brought us full circle. And I like to start off spiritually. And it's amazing how this is no accident. But the quote that you gave was, you know, for some people that would like to just look into it, it is Psalm 37. And how I know that, it happens to be my favorite verse, so much that my wife crocheted it before I got married as a handkerchief. So that's number one. And again, that was commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will do this for you and bring it to pass. But here's the reality. As you're speaking about this and you're challenging your fellow colleagues and caregivers, you know, I'm picturing a mirror. I'm picturing a mirror of every single one of you that is that mirror in the bathroom that when you turn on the shower and all of a sudden, slowly, it starts to fog up. And the fogging is not the uncertainty. It's the cloudiness that that allows us to make a judgment call, a choice, a decision. And when you turn off that water and the cloudiness starts to evaporate and the mirror is crystal clear, choices were made and choices were made for a reason. And your path was decided based off of a patient. That patient did not die in vain. She created what I'm sure many other patients have created, and that is really good doctors. So I think that this is an opportunity for everyone to sit down, put your egos in check, and really come to the terms of the questions that were provided to you and really give Dr. E a feedback. And I think that from one colleague to the other, that's a great conversation to have. So I'm hoping that if anything comes from this, it is that our survivor or survivors will have learned something about the other side of a doctor. And at the same token, the current doctors know who they really are behind the stethoscope.
Angel Santana, thank you for your words of wisdom, as always, beautifully said. And I thank you for you. And I meant every word I said in the beginning of the podcast. Get well soon, my brother. For all of those out there, have faith, let it begin. Absolutely a must listen to, you know, as a 1-2 punch with the Croc podcast. Rod Freeman, my man, small biz up. Any of you guys who need anything for your side gig, for your side hustle, for your work, for your own personal use, he would be your guy. Rod, hope you're feeling better. You look good the other week. Keep it going, man. To the board of directors, thank you for your kindness, your sharing of your talents for our amazing survivors and thrivers. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, for your constant support and belief in us. And we're going to end a little bit. We're going to end the same way we always end, but my little pep talk is going to be to colleagues rather than to our survivors this week. And I think appropriately so. So listen, guys and gals, for those of you out there, as long as I've been out there, You know, there are dark days. We get tired. The system sometimes wears us down, and we have gotten busy. We've gotten to be well known, right? You know, I can't tell you how many times a day I heard, "Oh, Dr. Iannelli, I've heard so much about you. You took care of my grandmother's sisters, neighbors, cousins, boyfriends, you know, dog sitter, blah, 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 blah." And, you know, "Hey, Dr. Iannelli, I heard so many good things about you, blah, 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 blah." You know, there's a reason why, you know, Dr. Iannelli and Dr. Miller and Dr. Smith and Dr. Jones and Dr. whoever, Dr. Santana, all these different doctors who hear that every day and are so busy, double booked, you're so efficient, you've gotten so good at what you do. Like, you get your dictaphone in your hand and you're like, just basically just, you know, just like an auctioneer, just jamming all of these words, making these charts, taking care of these people expertly, curing cancer and making everybody feel terrific. And did you, you know, this is a podcast for you guys to take stock, to take a step back and just remember how you became Dr. Smith and Dr. Miller and Dr. Jones and Dr. Santana. How'd you get there? What were your core values? Are your core values still your core values? Do you still love what you do? Do you want to keep doing it forever and ever and ever and ever? Or can you not wait to get the hell out of the game? Are you someone who really cares about the people you take care of? Do you truly still remember the sacred vow we took when we graduated medical school or nursing school? Do you guys still remember the privilege that we have to take care of these amazing people? And as I said, we will end this podcast the same as we end, always back to our survivor thrivers. On behalf of Angel and Rod and the entire board of directors here at Kroc, we wish you all a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.